This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. It is 6 a.m. sharp, Friday, the 21st of May. And all I have to say, Noel, is thank God it's Friday.
I will just echo what you said. Friday. But, you know, we can't really go anywhere, right? We sort of have to stay at home, right? That's some sort of an obligation, so to speak.
I mean, I'm good with all of that. I just want to sleep in past 6 a.m. in the morning. Can I wake up to the sun tomorrow? Yes, I can, because it's a Saturday.
But why would you want to waste your weekend? You should wake up at the same time like what you do in the weekdays.
That ain't happening.
And make the most of it.
You know, there's this thing called the circadian rhythm, Noel. I want to kind of get into that a little bit, make my body feel like it's one with Earth. And I was just trying to figure out how long I could go on that little bit of a spew, but I'm going to stop there. And let's get on with the show, shall we, Noel? What is happening? Let's talk about 6:30 first. What's happening at the international stage today? What are we taking a look at?
Well, we've been looking really closely at what's going on in Israel and Gaza. And so now there may be a truce, like some light at the end of the tunnel, at least for the short term. And also something about the Shangri-La dialogue being cancelled in Singapore, which is really a shame. And something on Qantas in Australia.
Yeah, and towards the end of the hour, we'll take a look at the local papers and portals. Straight away on the front pages of the Malaysian Reserve and the Star, I can see that there's a lot of headlines here about lockdowns and SOPs. I think even the NST has gone with the headline, to lock or not. Well, we'll be getting into that actually at about, I think, 7:15 or 7:45 with Dr. Carmelo Felito, just to give us a little bit of a... At 7:45, we'll be speaking to him about the MCO and how to address it and whether lockdowns make sense or not. Towards where we are now, though, the next half hour is more relaxed, the more fun side of serious business. In about 15 minutes, we will be talking about whether celebrities can be effective politicians, because I saw this article about whether this new TV series, Young Rock, which is based on Dwayne Johnson, could be his own kind of ramp to political hood in a few years' time. But before all of that, we're going to talk about anxiety that limits your creative genius. Yes, just the perfect way to start 6 a.m. in the morning. You can always get in touch with us and let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio, but you can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We'll be back in just a bit to keep you company. In the meantime, it's James Taylor with Money Machine. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And right now, Noel, we're taking a look at this article over at the BBC.com. I thought it was quite interesting. Headline caught my attention. It was "The Anxiety That Limits Your Creative Genius." And I mean, even before I read the article, when you think of that line, what brings to mind is the fact that sometimes there's a lot of anxiety when it comes to creative work, because, you know, there's self-doubt involved. There's always going to be this perpetual, is it good enough? Is it not good enough? Is it going to be accepted? Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing enough work? Because creativity is so subjective, and it's not like a one or zero. It's a shades of gray. What were some of the things you picked up when you read this? Because it's a particularly interesting article.
Yeah, so this article starts off with referring to Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote this book, Big Magic, and you might remember her. She wrote Eat, Pray, and Love. Eat, Pray, Love. Anyway,
what is that?
Yeah, she lists down fears that can limit the creative process. You're afraid that you have no talent. You're afraid you'll be rejected, criticized, and worse still, ignored. I think the point here, when you are fearful or you're in a state of anxiety, anxious, you have a lot of intrusive thoughts, right? You know, being not good enough, being being very judgmental of yourself. And also one thing, when you are anxious, the amygdala, which is the lizard part of the brain, it takes over, right? And it's called the amygdala hijack. And that hijacks your executive thinking skills. Because when we talk about creativity, it's also about problem solving, right? Even, you know, an accountant needs to solve problems too, right? I mean, of course, creativity can be channeled, you know, in quite unwise ways. But the point here is that we all need some form of creativity when we think about problem solving. So with the amygdala hijack, you know, you cannot think so straight, or your vision becomes very narrow. Like, you only focus on one particular point and fail to see the bigger picture of what's going on. And then as a result, you kind of like, you know, your options are reduced, like your options that come to your mind are reduced. But of course, having said that, you know, I have seen people when they are anxious, or maybe when they are very, on a very goal-getting kind of momentum. There's the adrenaline rush. And some people actually become more creative. But I think by and large, I think most people are just less creative when they are in a state of being anxious.
Yeah, and I think it's also just the uncertainty that comes from creativity, right? So like if we take a look at a lot of creative work, it can be uncertain work. There's no set way of doing the work itself, right? Whether if you're an artist, let's say you're a painter, blank canvas, you can go in any direction with that until you've really found your voice or your artistry, your theme. It's you could go anywhere, and because of that, you've got a little bit of a paradox of choice, which is very, very, very uncertain, anxiety-inducing, just to use a few words there.
Yeah, but the mind always likes certain things, right? Because it's a survival instinct.
Yeah, but also like, you know, it's the opportunity cost, right? You'd be saying like, oh, I could do anything, but what should I start doing? All the greatest artists or actors or things like that, they all started off doing variety of things, and eventually found their specialty, right? In terms of whether it's comedy, humor, what's the fancy words for art? I can't remember right now. But even music, right? It changes over time, because you're not necessarily going to find the sweet spot at the start. And in fact, this applies to the creator economy, right? YouTube, Instagram, all these different things. Will have uncertainty at the start. And if full-time YouTubers face uncertainty on a daily basis, because what's going to hit and what's going to miss? How do I keep doing this? Especially if you're working for your own. There are, yes, I think about 10 to 15% of the Malaysian population, working population, is in full-time work. The rest do their own work. They do, they're solopreneurs, they're side hustlers, they're not side hustlers, they're full-time gig workers. They are small entrepreneurs. And it's a very uncertain space, and I try to imagine myself doing it, and immediately the uncertainty just raises up, because it's such a, I don't know how I would start. And in fact, on this note, I had a great conversation with Suraya Zainuddin, a writer and founder of Ringgit or Ringgit.com, about this, right? This was in October 2020, and I just asked her for how she got started, right? Because she's a full-time a creative person. She runs a blog, she does writing work, she writes, she's an author as well. She does speaking engagements, and that's her full-time gig. And that kind of thing, I would imagine, requires a lot of creativity and a lot of, well, uncertainty and fluidity. I don't know how I would, just the thought of it is scaring me. I think my BP is going up, Noel.
Yeah, just thinking about it, right? So I think even some professions are in particularly prone to creative anxiety. So teachers, for example, they have to constantly improvise on the spot, right? And then they are looking at sea of 40 faces staring back at them, a variety of expression, and you can imagine how anxious they can get. I think here's the point about being mindful, right? So just creating some distance, watching your anxious thoughts and feelings, and just trying not to be, try not to judge yourself for having those feelings and accepting them as just part and parcel of life. It's okay to feel down sometimes. It's okay to feel up as well. And just being kind, kind to yourself and others.
That's a beautiful point, Noel. And I think that part about accepting the downs in life, that's something I think a lot of us don't, I think we struggle with it, because Hollywood has sold us this idea that life is always going up, it's always going to be good, that the way we self-actualize is a life that is just pure happiness. And that's not life. Life looks like the stock market. It's up and down and up and down and up and down. And that's the way it's going to be forever and ever. Now, the way I look at it is life is a series of points it's a line of best fit, right? And your hope is that over the long run, your life is trending upwards. It's not going to be a perpetual up. You're going to take two steps back. You're going to fall. You're going to hit your face against something, and you're going to struggle. Some of us will struggle more than others. Some of us have different conditions, and some of us are more privileged for sure. But this idea that life is pure happiness, or that we are striving for a life that is only happy, is such a false idea.
Yeah, talking about privilege, privileged people also suffer from depression, for example, and anxiety. So thoughts and feelings are actually expressions of our unmet needs. And so we should know what that might be, to study that is our unmet hungers, right? And so just to invite kindness to that.
Yeah, we've gone full scale into mindfulness this morning, Noel. I love it. It's a great way to end the Friday, to end the work week, kind of give everyone a little bit of a starter boost to the weekend, kind of give yourself a bit of mindfulness and a little bit of a reality check. But you know what? If we think that we have got this all wrong, you can get in touch with us over on Twitter at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. And if you wanted to check out that Ringgit and Sense I mentioned, you can find it on the BFM app or the website bfm.my. just search up Ringgit or Ringgit and you'll find a few of the podcasts. This one in particular was Ringgit or Ringgit's tips and tricks for freelancers, side hustlers and solopreneurs. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. It's now 6:19 a.m. Friday, the 21st of May, and that was Rilo Kiley with The Money Maker. And you know what's a real money maker in this world, Noel? Dwayne The Rock Johnson, a fantastic moneymaker.
I can't help but agree with you.
He's a fantastic, I don't know, brand ambassador, seller of products, but also his movies do so well in the box office. In fact, by some estimates, he is the highest paid actor in the world. And he's not like the Tom Cruises of the world, but he certainly makes bank. He knows what he's good at and he goes for it. He's got a new show coming out, or it's already out, I think, and it's called Young Rock. And basically, as the title just tells you immediately, it's about young Dwayne Johnson and about his life as a kid and his family and things like that. And this New York Times article is, I guess, watching this show and thinking, is this his run-up to an election? Because could this be Dwayne Johnson's apprentice? And by that we mean Donald Trump spent a lot of time on TV before he was president, and the Apprentice show, which started around the 2000-2001 time, that gave him a lot of popularity as a quote-unquote business person and leader. It kind of gave him that ramp, right, towards stardom. And then in the 2008s, when the Obama administration came in, he started getting really involved by criticizing Obama for every little thing and being one of the key proponents of the whole birther conspiracy, which was, well, now we find out was just the beginning of many, many, many other things to come. But I digress. So coming back to this, 2000, before Bush ran for election, Trump had put a committee together to look whether he was a viable candidate. And the answer was no. Later on, he started a TV show and became very popular. So is this the same route that Dwayne The Rock Johnson will go through? Because he wouldn't be the first celebrity to become a politician or leader of the free world, for that matter. Ronald Reagan was an actor, governor of California, and then became president of the United States.
Yeah, so one can't help but think this is a very subtle political campaign by Johnson to kind of garner the audience sympathy, to reach out to people who may not even be following him yet. I have to say, I mean, he's not the actor or, you know, star that I would naturally follow. But I'm quite impressed by his stardom, right? By his rise to, to fame and his story, you know, that brash, quite brash and trash talking star. But, you know, he has his ways of doing things. And of course, the first question people may ask, does he have the intellectual chops to even run a country, right? To become the president of the United States, the most important country in the world. If you ask that question, well, Ronald Reagan, he was an actor and he became president. A peanut farmer, that would be Jimmy Carter, he also became president. Of course, he was like a businessman, right? But the point here is, that's why it's called the free world, right? The American dream. But it'd be interesting to see if Johnson even ever make it and he's able to capitalize on his fame. Maybe he'll be someone who will just cut through the political fluff, right? Maybe even bring world peace, right? By just, just cutting.
Just being The Rock?
Yeah, just placing himself in the meeting. I think I can imagine people like, okay, well, let's not mess with this man.
I just hope he doesn't bring the people's elbow into diplomatic situations. But if that just flew over your head, just leave it be. It's, I guess, this whole situation, because he's always been an actor. And back in the day, during the what was known as the WWF, now the WWE days, he was a wrestler who had a little bit of an attitude, right? It was a show he was putting on, essentially, for the crowd. Everything was made up. It's a show. And then later on in his acting days, he started off with movies like The Tooth Fairy, Game Plan, very family-friendly things. And now he's grown on to become this, well, anything actor. He was in Moana. He voice acted in Moana. So kids already know his voice and love him. He's in the Fast and Furious franchise. He's in the reboot of the
Jungle... Jumanji, sorry. Not, I was going to say Jungle Book. Is that wrong? He had the Cruise movie as well, but he's in the remake of Jumanji, which has done so well with him at the helm. He's such a likable character. And in all these franchises, it's also contractually obligated, I think, that his personality exudes. It comes through the movies. I just wonder whether celebrities become effective, not just effective politicians, Noel, but whether they can become effective activists, right? Whether they can evoke change in the world, whether in office or not, effectively. Because whether they're intelligent or have the right chops or whatever, what they are, for the most part, is very likable individuals with massive fan bases who can be influenced. Is that enough to evoke change in the world?
Yeah, so this likability may come down to also some... level of authenticity, if you're talking about in the long term, right? I think the authenticity is really quite important. So, which also bothers me sometimes, like, you know, actors becoming, wanting to become presidents. Like, what is the real image? What do they really, really stand for? I mean, who are they really? Is it just an image or is this just a gimmick? And, you know, that's the thing that bothers me. But I guess over time, people will be able to see the true self of someone.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about celebrities around the world, I mean, Imran Khan, famous, super famous cricketer, became Prime Minister of Pakistan. And I didn't know this, Noel, but Amitabh Bachchan was apparently an MP for India back in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. So it's not something that's new, right? And of course, the other great example is the Governator, Arnold Schwarzenegger. He became the governor of California. And at one point, people were thinking whether this guy could go the Ronald Reagan distance. But that seems to have changed. And the other question is, even if The Rock did run for president, let's say in 10 years or so, which party would he go for? That's not a decided factor just yet. Could he be the third force that Howard Schultz and Bloomberg were noted as, right? The force that in between the radicalized Republican Party that's no longer what it was and the even more left-leaning Democratic Party that's also kind of not what it used to be, there is a space for a third, a third candidate. But the structure in the U.S. doesn't allow for that just yet, just because of the way the elections go about. But if you had a force that was, well, as sturdy and solid as The Rock, I wonder whether you could make that attempt. Because Bloomberg may be a great business person, but he's not famous. Howard Schultz may have brought back Starbucks, but he's not famous across the world. Not the same way that The Rock is. And Ronald Reagan may have been a great actor or whatever, but he was very niche. It was just California or whatever. So I wonder whether The Rock will also run for governor of California and then later on president of the free world.
Yeah, I guess California is the home of Hollywood, right? That would be their natural home. But I feel that, you know, the role of a president is really quite important. I mean, all said and done, popularity is one, likability is one. The person who is able to do the job, the person with the steady nerves, the person with you know, a thinking brain, right? You still need someone like that. And I mean, if I was an American, I'd be a bit doubtful to vote for, you know, someone who may not, who just, you know, rides on popularity and has no intellectual substance. But of course, you know, The Rock may just prove us all wrong.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the first. And I stand corrected. The Governator is not American-born, so he would not have been able to become president. On that note, let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Can celebrities become politicians, effective politicians or activists? Do you want The Rock to go the distance? Keep it here to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Karnasin with Noel Lim and Alin Mark, who has apparated into the studio with us this morning. It is now 6:39 a.m. And that was Heartbreaker by The Walkman. And before we get
into... Is that talking about me, do you think?
I hope not.
Anyway. Don't take it personally, Lin.
If it was Heartbreaker by The Walk-In, then maybe, you know. But, you know, we got a few comments on social media, so let's get into it. I'd like to start off with a WhatsApp here from Ro. He WhatsApped in response to our little talks that we did about The Rock, the Dwayne The Rock Johnson, or as he goes by now, Dwayne Johnson. The WWE's E is an excellent training ground for a political career, faking it over-the-top speeches and reacting violently to confrontation, much like American foreign policy. Huh. Interesting. And then we've also got a tweet. Lynn, why don't you, what has been tweeted to us?
R says, in response to the question that we asked, are you less creative when you're anxious? They responded in with creative. I'm less human when I'm anxious. And I have to say, I identify with this. When I'm anxious, I start to greatly resemble one of those small shivering dogs when you take them out, like a little terrified chihuahua.
You'll be trembling away? Yeah. But then how do you like knit and draw when you're trembling away?
I don't. I just don't when I'm anxious.
But is that an antidote? Like, you know, if you start painting, does that help you? Is that therapeutic enough to calm you down?
It depends on the situation, I think. If I'm really very anxious, I can't sit still long enough to actually focus on anything creative. But if it's kind of the run-up to an anxiety kind of period, I can maybe derail it with something creative, yeah.
Yeah. Now, though, we got to jump into some international news. And we start off with some breaking news that Israel and Hamas have agreed a Gaza ceasefire after 11 days of what has been quite terrible fighting. In fact, President Biden, I think, is speaking right now as we speak over at the White House. And in his remarks, he's confirmed the ceasefire is happening between Israel and Hamas. And he spoke today with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and as well as Egyptian President Al-Sisi, who is the mediator in this conversation. A few other comments have come up, including Biden standing by the point that Israel has the right to defend itself, although proportion seems to be a big question, I think, for most of us. And he has lamented the death toll. This is a developing situation right now. Actually, he's speaking right now as we speak. But hopefully this is a lasting ceasefire. But, you know, this is just a band-aid, right, at this juncture?
It is. It doesn't actually address the root causes of the problem. And if we think about it, this is a long-standing issue between Israel and Palestine. And we first saw kind of peacemaking attempts fall through about, I think it was 7 years ago at this point. So we've had these periodic little bursts of conflict since then. If history is going to repeat itself, this is not going to be the end of this conflict anytime soon.
Yeah, so, you know, it's no easy solution, obviously. And, well, people are questioning whether, you know, what's happening now. Is this something for China to gain from? This is the US's current position is a gift to China, according to Richard Gowen, UN director at a crisis group think tank, and he was quoted by the Straits Times. So the US has been trying to pressure China to back UN actions over situations like Myanmar, but now Washington is stopping the Security Council and speaking up on the Middle East, according to Gowen. And this is hurting Biden's reputation at the UN and leaves China looking like the responsible power. And like what Roshan, you're saying, right? Sometimes maybe we just need that third power, right? That balancing force.
Yeah, I don't agree that China is the third force, because you can't have done the same thing and then come to the party and say, oh, you're doing it wrong as well.
Yes, and so therefore I'm right to be wrong too.
Yes, so the third force is maybe like India, but even they have got so many human rights issues, right? But it does paint the US in a bad light, because they are the purveyors of freedom and human liberty and all that jazz. China doesn't pretend to be that. So I think in that sense, it does paint them in a slightly better light, or at least it gains them more fans in certain situations. But then you come here and support Palestine, or you can come and support the US doing stronger actions, but you still got your Uyghur issue, which is still very much ongoing. And you, pretend there is a whole, what's the word they like to use? Re-education.
Yes, they call them re-education. And it's just camps.
I don't know.
Yeah, this is definitely very much a developing
story. It's a Friday. Don't feel bad.
Yes,
perk up.
It's just one deep sigh. Response.
This is the heartbreaker.
To international news.
International news is the heartbreaker.
But also, just looking at a close neighbor of ours, Singapore has seen its virus cases rising over the past couple of days, and it has notably also seen a major event cancellation. So the organizers of the Shangri-La Dialogue, which usually draws in top military officials and diplomats, they've cancelled their event in Singapore, which was supposed to be held at the start of June between the 4th and the 5th. This is right on the heels of the cancellation of Davos as well. So, you know, if I was the Singapore government right now, I would be feeling the pinch. But then it's really, I think, in large part to be expected, what with the pandemic still a major issue.
Yeah, and the biggest casualty of all that is the tourism industry, right? And the airline companies are certainly bleeding. So I think Qantas, it forecasts more than $1.5 billion loss in the 2021 financial year ending in June. Hundreds more job cuts are expected and a two-year wage freeze. And I'm actually just looking at the news. I think it came out yesterday. AirAsia also posted a quarterly net loss of almost about $1.something billion for the quarter ended March 31st, just putting it as a comparison. And I think this is their largest quarterly loss.
And the question remains, did we underestimate, the collective we, underestimate the implications of the COVID-19 pandemic last year by thinking that it would be resolved this year? Well, you can let us know over on Twitter at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, a look at the local papers and portals. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Noel Lim and Lynn Mark in the studio this morning. It's now 6:51 a.m. Thursday, May 21st. Hey, sorry, Friday, May 21st. I must not take us back in time. It's Friday. Let's stay here on Friday. Right now, we're taking a look at the local papers and portals. And let's start off with the NST. Noel, what is happening on the front page? I remember the headline was, to lock or not? That is the question.
Yes, that is the question on all our minds, right? So as COVID-19 cases and death rates continue to surge, experts are appealing for a complete lockdown, but businesses are pushing back. And so the National Security Council will meet today in Putrajaya to decide whether to lock down the whole country as concerns are mounting over the number of cases that we are starting to chart. I mean, it's good and bad, right? Because you are, you know, testing a lot of people and you are, you know, surfacing cases so that you can take anticipatory action to prevent further infections. But it's coming to a point where we have to seriously consider lockdowns. And so like NST have spoken to a few experts like Dr. Malina Osman. She did a modelling and she predicts that active cases will reach 50,000 by mid-May if a ban on activities that did not involve mask wearing was allowed. And up to yesterday, we know it's already about 50,000. And so so it's something that she's rather concerned about. But of course, on the business side, they are also concerned about their livelihoods, right? And you know, paying salaries, rental and all that. A Federation of Malaysian Manufacturers are saying a total lockdown will cause irreparable
damage.
Yes, thank you. Damage.
The only person who can save us from big words.
Yes, thank you so much. Yeah, you know, it's too early in the morning. So, so it's President Tan Sri Sothian Lai says that the government urges the government not to institute a total lockdown or in states with high infection rates. I think we can do a total lockdown or some form of MCO. But what else, right? That is the big question. You don't just do a lockdown and after that cases spike up again.
In fact, we'll be posting a Twitter poll shortly about this in around 7:05 a.m. thereabouts. So be sure to let us know what you think of that. I've got the Malaysian Reserve page 2 here. Bottom left corner, prosecution fails to link 114 million ringgit cash seized in Najib's condos to one MDB. What are the implications here? So the story goes that the prosecution has failed to connect the money seized in a Dato' Sri Mohamed Najib Razak linked condominium to one MDB. The KL High Court has dismissed the government's bid to forfeit the 114 million ringgit in cash that was seized from the Pavilion residences on May 17th, 2018. Judge Dato' Mohamed Jamil Hussein also ruled that the prosecution has failed to tie the funds to any criminal breach of trust case. And this is a statement from him. As the predicate a predicate offence was not proven, the issue that monies were obtained from illegal activities do not rise. Thus, it cannot be said that the money to be forfeited is the result of the conduct of the predicate offence. That was at the hearing yesterday. He added that the applicant failed to also prove that the money amounting to that, that 114 million was proceeds from money laundering. However, the paper does note that the judge made no order for the money, which is held at Bank Negara Malaysia, to be returned to the owners at this point.
Yeah, I guess this is the principle of innocence until proven guilty at play here. I mean, from a political perspective, I wonder if this is going to be the start of Najib's return to act kind of more active.
Oh, you can bet it is.
Roles. Yes, I'm sure this is going to be, his supporters are going to be rejoicing.
It doesn't matter that he's got other cases to work on. The fact that he's quote-unquote won this will be enough of a headline to use, right? All it really is that the prosecution has failed to link it to any crimes. So for all we know, he got 114 million ringgit for just being him.
I think he claims they were gifts.
They were gifts, right? And I mean, people give people 140 million ringgit in gifts. It's just a thing we
do. I'm looking for someone who would just even give me 1 million ringgit. I'm quite happy with just that.
Also, we also see Tan Sri Muhammad Shafi Abdullah's money laundering trial begin today. That's after almost 3 years, the trial is about to begin. And he faced two counts of money laundering charges involving 9.5 million ringgit he allegedly received from former Prime Minister Dato' Sri Mohamed Najib, and also two charges of making false statements to the Inland Revenue Board, and which will commence today at the KL High Court.
I'm looking at the CEO morning brief by The Edge, and their front page is about Air Asia X, which has posted largest quarterly net losses and also perhaps plans more job cuts. Not looking rosy indeed for the aviation industry.
Yeah, and with that in mind, that's all we've got from the local papers and portals. As usual, you can get in touch with us over on Twitter at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 to take you to the 7 a.m. news bulletin. We've got the Indigo. We've got Stevie Wonder with Higher Ground. Keep you here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.